mindfulness and self-compassion are really like, you know, the perfect partners, in the sense that it's one thing to be aware of feeling anxious, but what do you do with that awareness if you aren't able to meet it with something, if you aren't able to bring something to it? And that's where compassion comes in, that sense of softening and soothing towards your own pain. And again, like I said, it is a training. Like anything we train in, the piano, learning a language, we need to sit down and we need to actually make that conscious effort.
Welcome to True Intention. Podcast where we dive deep into the art of healing, the journey of transformation, and the secrets to building a life that's truly beautiful. I'm your host, Tina Brown, and I believe that within each of us lies the power to heal, transform, and create a life filled with purpose and beauty. In every episode, we'll explore the stories of incredible individuals who have overcome adversity, found their true intentions, and crafted a life that's nothing short of inspiring. Whether you're seeking guidance on personal growth, self-discovery, or simply looking for a dose of inspiration, True Intention is here to light your path. Our guests will share their intimate journeys, powerful insights, and practical tips to help you embark on your own transformative adventure. So join us each week as we uncover the wisdom, courage, and resilience needed to turn life's challenges into opportunities for growth. Let's embark on this journey together, because when we set our true intentions, the possibilities are limitless. This is True Intention. Let the transformation begin. Hello, it's Tina, and you're very welcome back to True Intention. Today's guest is Fiona Brennan, CEO of The Positive Habit, clinical hypnotherapist, best-selling author, and inspirational speaker. Fiona is a two-time best-selling author and appears regularly in the mainstream media, where she is an ambassador for positive thinking and well-being. Her first book is the Irish Times and Eason's bestseller, The Positive Habit. Her most recent book, The Self-Love Habit, was published in 2021, hitting the bestseller list straight away. Her latest book on sleep is due for publication in April this year and is a truly transformational program based on cutting-edge research in the areas of sleep science, positive psychology, lifestyle medicine, neuroscience, and mindfulness. I loved this conversation with Fiona. Being in her presence is very special, and I know you will feel that too. We talked about learning the importance of self-compassion and forgiveness for personal growth, recognizing the significance of taking responsibility for your life and the empowerment it brings. And with the release of Fiona's next book, Sleep Well, just around the corner, we spoke all about sleeping well and living more. Let's dive in. I hope you enjoy. Fiona, you're very welcome to True Intention, and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Tina. Like I said, I'm really, really happy to be here with you.
So I have so many questions, but I'd like to, about so many different things, because you do so many things, and I'd like to cover as much as possible for the listeners, of course. But I'd love to know, if we went back a bit and before Fiona and The Positive Habit, and find out a little bit more about you and I suppose your starting point for getting into this type of work and where you were in your own life and how that kind of relates to where you are now.
Yeah, well, I think it's a little bit like what you said, Tina, yourself, you know, that often it is one's own suffering, if you like, leads us to have a deeper understanding of what that is. And then perhaps a desire to alleviate it for others, having gone through a process oneself. And I know that you've shared that as well. So I think that it's like, it's really important, especially in my work, that I know what it's like to feel these things, you know, that there is that really deep understanding of what it's like to be out of sorts, if you like, to put it sometimes mildly, and sometimes that's all it can be, is a feeling of being out of sorts or not yourself. And you know, that connection to ourself and that understanding, as I say, of suffering. And suffering can seem like a strong word, but it isn't really. It's actually quite accurate when you are emotionally in pain, when you're suffering from anxiety. And I certainly did suffer from anxiety, very chronic anxiety, I would say, really from, God, it's at different points in my life, but certainly my teenage years up until my probably late 20s, essentially. So a big chunk of time there where, you know, I wouldn't even have been aware, let's say, that that is what was going on. Back then, there was a lot less talk, in fact, very little, if not any talk around this. And so therefore, the assumption was made, perhaps, that this was just the way I was or one was, and that it was something that you really had to, it wasn't even something. It was just very definitive, very black and white. This is who you are anxious, you are stressed, you are overwhelmed, you are struggling, you know, and that it was like, this is a fait accompli, it's a finished full stop. And I suppose that journey of really realization that it's not the case, that it's not, certainly not who we are at our core being. And it wasn't, as I say, you know, there's chunks of my life where that more authentic, true self would have shone bright before the anxiety got its grip, if you like.
And I think that you're right. And I think a lot of people think, because society kind of leads that way, to still feel like this is just who I am. And that really strikes. I was watching, I don't know if you've seen Tyson Fury, the boxer. So, and his wife, they have a documentary series, or I suppose, or a reality TV series more, I guess, on Netflix. And it was, it's not something that I generally would watch, but somebody else had suggested and I said, I'll put it on. And that was actually mentioned, I think, in probably every episode that I saw, either by Tyson himself, because he suffers from bipolar disorder or something like that. He would describe himself as being up and down all the time. And he said, that's just who I am. That's it. I just have to live with it like this. And his wife would say, his father, you know, in each episode, somebody would mention, you know, they worry about him so much, but they say, but this is just the way he is. This is just what we have to deal with. And I think that's a chronic feeling or thought in society. And it's not true. Sure, it's not. Like, we don't have to just live like this if you're feeling
Absolutely.
That way.
Yeah, well, I think it has changed. I mean, like I said, this was back, you know, I suppose I'm 48 now, so we're looking at 20 years ago. And I think that, you know, certainly the people that I work with, that there is this much more flexible sense of how, you know, we can change, and that there is a sense of hope and practical things that can be done. You know, like we live in a very different world than, you know, in terms of mental and emotional well-being. And there just wasn't that scope. There just wasn't that awareness at all going on 20 years ago, or even 30 years ago, you know, when I was a teenager, I suppose, at that stage. It makes you laugh, Tina, like when you think, you know, and that's the wonderful thing as well, is that, you know, that I feel so young, I feel so healthy, I feel so well, I feel so full of life, and much more so maybe even than I was when I was younger. Do you know what I mean? Which it's a wonderful thing to think that as you mature, you actually really become younger. That doesn't
sound
but I
totally get that. For me, as well, I feel like that the older that I'm getting, becoming more comfortable with yourself. And when you start doing the work and you heal things and past traumas and stuff, and you accept, it's the self-acceptance. It just takes this huge weight off you that you didn't even know that you were carrying around.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like kind of returning to that self. Like when I think of myself as a child, you know, there were different stages, let's say, where I would have been very, very happy, full of joy, full of light, full of life. And I think it's kind of that's the essence, let's say, of who we all are, is that unencumbered, unconditioned self, that is free to live in joy, to live in peace, to live with love, to feel secure, to feel empowered, to honor oneself, you know, and to have respect for oneself is a really important thing. And I would say there was times where I really lost that, you know, and that's very hard when you're not acting in a respectful way towards yourself. You know, it's you're living so closely to someone that you find difficult. And really that's what I work, whether it's one-to-one, whether it's groups, retreats, workshops, corporates, whatever work that I'm doing, or anyone in this field, it doesn't have to be me at all. It's essentially helping people to reunite, I think, with that authentic self. And that can sound a little bit vague, but what I really mean is the unconditioned self, the part that is at peace, the part that can feel safe. And I think it's important as well to say here that it is an ongoing love affair, if you like, with yourself and with life. And it requires a lot of devotion. It requires a lot of training. It requires a lot of practice. It's not something that you reach and say, that's it now. I'm done. You know, you continue this work. If you want to maintain it, you need to continue it. And I certainly know that myself. Like you know, I really am quite, I suppose, what would the word be? Ethical, in the sense that I practice what I teach. I don't say one thing and then go and do another, because it's to me that's inauthentic. So, you know, I do really kind of make sure that I care for myself as well as I can. And I think that if you're working as a therapist and you don't do that, you're going to burn out so quickly. And there's a really high turnover, you know, burnout rate in therapy, because it's a tough job. Like, you know, it's a really, you've got to show up to be there for people who are going through horrendous things, horrendous things. And if you don't really dig deep in yourself and know that you are strong and compassionate and able to leave that behind, you're going to run out of steam very, very quickly. And I suppose that was a fear of mine when I first started, because compassion can get very mixed with empathy, and in particular an empathetic distress. So, you know, certainly what's going on in the media, when we see violence, when we see war, you know, it can be easy to get very caught up with that and distressed by that, understandably. But on a basis where you're working with someone one-to-one, you have the, or in a group, you have the capacity to help, you know, to alleviate that suffering. And that's what I think is the essence of compassion. It's the sensitivity to one's or another person's suffering, and then the intention to help alleviate it. So yeah, it's a real honor to do this work, and I've learned so much. I'm doing it now 12 years, and like I said, you know, I suppose in the beginning that was a concern of mine. Would I be able to take it on? And I realized that it's actually by not taking it on that allows me to, in the moment, help, and then to release that and not carry it. And that's a real skill that requires a lot of training, you know, and I think it's so essential, that we do that. And then, you know, you can see it clearly in a therapist role, but in any role that we play, you know, whether any caring role in particular, a nurse, a mother, you know.
Yeah,
It's
and that's what exactly what I was thinking as you
yes.
were saying that was like, as a therapist, you're obviously, or you know, in any space, whether you work in, I suppose, in healing or coaching or whatever it is. And even I was thinking this about having my nails done or having your hair done. You're holding space for people because you're in a position where you come in. And I
Yes.
would say that, like, to the lovely girl that does my nails, what do you do, like, you know, to set things down? She's like, what do you talk about? And we were just, she goes, you know what, sometimes I do feel really drained or heavy on
Of
particular
course you
days,
would.
you know, because you are. So no matter what you're doing, whether you're a mother or sister, you know, an aunt, whatever it is, at some point you're holding space. So if we're not taking care of ourselves and filling our own cups back up, you know, you're not going to be able to be there for someone. And that's the thing. And I think society for us as women has us like running ragged. It's like grind, grind, grind. You must be a wonderful mother. If you're married, you must be a great wife. You know what I mean? You must be a wonderful cook. You must be a great taxi driver, ferrying your kids around everywhere. You must be fit. You must look a certain way. Like, we are so overwhelmed, like, with trying to be everything for everyone, and everybody's getting burnt out, you know. And especially then, I think, with social media, because it's so easy to compare yourself all the time, because like that's a highlight reel of somebody's life. And I think that you're putting other people on a pedestal, and no, you can't get there. Like, you will never reach kind of where we're putting ourselves on and what we're seeing day to day. So in saying all that, like, what do you think would be some of the simple ways to kind of start having a bit more self-compassion for ourselves and kind of setting down the pressures that we've been putting on ourselves?
I'd just say, listening to you there, I mean, I think that from a gender perspective, I think that yes, women have a lot of pressure, but I think men do too, right? So I think it's really important to always keep that openness. And that's what compassion essentially is that we're not looking at dividing things. And because the pressures may be different, but they're going to be there, you know? And men's mental health is one that is incredibly, like, you know, when I talk about mental health, let's say for myself, you know, where I am now is a large part is because I'm a woman, and I have permission to show and express emotion. It's society will accept if I cry or if I feel X, Y, or Z. But for men, we're still kind of, you know, really in the dark ages a lot now. There is changes, but it's really slow. It's not where it needs to be. So there's pressures on all of us in different ways. Certainly more for some people, that is true. But it's really taking that perspective that we can't compare suffering, whatever way it. And I keep saying the word suffering, but what I really mean is pain. I mean emotional pain. And you know, when you ask me about self-compassion, well. Like I'm currently teaching a training course on self-compassion at the moment, and the two leaders, the two sort of world experts in this area would be Kristen Neff and Paul Gilbert. So I would recommend anyone who is listening to this to look up their work. It's a huge area, you know, it's like it's again, it's just a word. It feels like, oh, self-compassion, yeah, I know that's something I need to do. But once you start to explore it, you realize just how many layers there are to it. There's actually a great test on Kristen Neff's website, selfcompassion.org, where you can test your own self-compassion and get a score to see how kind you are to yourself or not. And really understanding what compassion is first is the essential thing. Because once you can see what it means is that you go towards your own pain rather than away from it. Now the instinct is to avoid, right? And essentially our brains are primitive and are really designed to avoid that pain, you know. So we've got that primitive old part of our brain that doesn't want to feel pain and wants to seek pleasure. We've got a strong drive to strive forward, and that's the hunter-gatherer that's always looking for more, which is why we can feel so discontent a lot of the time. You know, it's really sad, but you might want to get a promotion, and you know, you're all your hopes and work, and you're putting yourself and you're, you know, and then you get the promotion and you're happy for a little bit, and then it goes away, and then there's the next. Now I want to get the new house or whatever it might be. And really, like, I think it's so important that people understand that this is not our fault, you know, that it is, we have a tricky brain. It's like glitches within our brain. And, you know, although it's not our fault, we still need to be accountable for it. And that's the kind of, that's the rub, right? It's like, you know, somebody spills milk and you didn't spill it, but you have to clear it up anyway, right? Because the way that our brains work, and that's why it is a training, is that our system of soothing, of calmness, of contentment, let's say, that safety system, requires training. It requires us to actually spend time, and that is the modern part of the brain, that's the new part of the brain, that's where all the hope comes from, that's where all the change comes from, that's where neuroplasticity comes from. And we want to really engage with meditation, mindfulness, and mindfulness and self-compassion are really, like, you know, the perfect partners, in the sense that it's one thing to be aware of feeling anxious, but what do you do with that awareness if you aren't able to meet it with something, if you aren't able to bring something to it? And that's where compassion comes in, that sense of softening and soothing towards your own pain. And again, like I said, it is a training. Like anything we train in, the piano, learning a language, we need to sit down and we need to actually make that conscious effort. Now, I am also a clinical hypnotherapist, so a lot of that is working on the subconscious level. And this is where, you know, there's that effortless sense of, you know, when your brain is most malleable, first thing in the morning, going to sleep at night, you're in your theta brainwave state. It's like, that's where we live as children, in that place of imagination, of wonder, of flexibility. And you can really optimize those times of your day to create positive change for yourself.
Yeah, I think I love the way that you've described it and made it seem so easy, because there's so much information available to us out there, you know, and you can get some of it. And then some people, they get so passionate that, but they're, it's like they're talking in tongues almost, because our brains aren't, you're like, oh, I kind of understand what you're saying. So it's even, you know, about neuroplasticity, which is just, is about rewiring the brain from the way that you used to think. And when that was explained to me, I was like, oh, I get, okay. It makes it seem more accessible. So I think we do need to be doing that, you know, and because sometimes I guess when you get passionate about something and you're learning all about it, you can get really carried away with the scientific terms of it, whatever. But I think if you want to spread that awareness, you have to make it accessible for everybody to do, because that's the point, isn't it? It's like, we want to tell everybody that this work is possible for them. It's not just somebody that has loads of money that can hire a coach, or, you know, somebody that lives somewhere else that has access to more things or whatever it may be. Like, doing the work, as it's called, which is just about, as you say, it's like coming home to yourself and figuring out who you are, essentially. And that's, for me, I guess that's what it has been, in that I was living as a chronic people pleaser, and I was in chronic stress for years, and I didn't even realize, because I just thought that's what I had to do. I had to raise these children, but I had to work full time, and then because of that guilt, I had to, you know, try and take them here, there, and everywhere on my days off, and also keep the house clean. And I was actually just in a constant, like, flow of burnout all the time. And then, like you say, because I didn't realize why I was unhappy in myself, I was searching outside of myself for everything, you know. And it was just like you said earlier, I was like, okay, when we get the house, when I get that promotion at work, when I, you know, and then you have the house and you're like, oh, we'll get the bigger car, oh, we'll put the extension on, whatever it is. You're watching other people and, you know, you're like, when we get the, oh, we'll do the big holiday, or we'll do it. It's all outside of yourself. So I, you know, was running away from myself all the time. And for me, you know, in a sense, it felt like I had to burn my whole life down. The whole thing had to come crashing down before I realized that what change was needed. And for me, that was the way. And for a lot of people, it does tend to be either something like that, some kind of catalyst in their life that makes them, that forces their hand to change, you know, like an illness or the death of a loved one, or it can be something like that. It's very hard because I guess the way society set up, and that is the way you spoke about men as well, that even though they may want to change is there, but it seems like so hard for us, you know. So instead of waiting for like something terrible to happen, if people are listening and they're resonating, like what we're talking about and what you're talking about is resonating with them, what would you say would be a good first step, or, you know, or something to kind of to start them on this path if they feel that this is that they're not happy and they want to start making changes? What's a good place to start?
Well, you know, I know what you're saying, but it's never like, it's never that clear, right? Because it's so subjective. It's so personal to the context of a person's life. So it really depends on, you know, like you say, first of all, the awareness, if what you're saying in your question is that the awareness is there, right? That they are aware that they are suffering and that they want to change. Well, then you're kind of 90% there in terms of the desire to change. One of the hardest things that people who, let's say, don't actually, and succeed is not the right word, but don't manage to move forward, let's say, who stay stuck in negative thought patterns, in maybe it's a victim mentality, maybe it's a martyred mentality, maybe it's drama, going from one drama to another. I was like that. I remember creating drama in my life because, well, who am I without this drama? Where, you know, it can't be just plain sailing. There has to be an up, there has to be a down. And a lot of it is unconscious. And like I said, not our fault. So if you are ready and you're actually willing to change, you're 90% there. The next part is really finding someone that you feel safe with, a therapist, person that you can feel like you can share whatever it is that you need to share and that you're not being judged. Because so much of our pain comes from feeling that we're being judged, that we've closed the door on our own hearts. We don't want to expose ourselves because we're worried about what other people will think, a fear of rejection. A lot of this comes into imposter syndrome. It comes from high achievers. So, or, you know, it's evident in high achievers. And when you actually feel, yeah, you know, I am ready. Well then, and I think it's an important point, and I've heard Niall Breslin, who's great on all of this, and has really, I actually think, done so much for mental health in Ireland. He really has brought it so much further forward than it would be, I think, without his advocacy and his great work. So if you find you go to a therapist and you don't connect, please don't give up and think, well, therapy isn't for me. You know, you might have to try a few till you find, and it's not that the therapist isn't a good therapist, right? They could be brilliant, a very good, skilled therapist, but they might not just be right for you, right? Whatever it is, you want to find someone that you really connect with. So that's always the first port of call, is to get some level of understanding. You can't move forward until you understand. You know, all of these affirmations and meditations, they're all really important. They're training tools, but essentially it's like understanding who you are and why you are the way you are is life-changing, because you start to understand, oh, like, for example, I know why I'm a people pleaser, because, you know, I was always looking for my mother's approval, for example, and she was, you know, too busy. We had with six kids in our family, and she never, you know, I was the eldest. I had to look after everyone, you know. So knowing these things is actually like really helpful, because you go, oh, okay, I can understand that now. So it doesn't have to define me anymore. And it's not about blame. It's not about saying that. And people feel really hard when they're talking about their parents, you know, in therapy. There's always this sense now, and she was lovely now. I'm not saying she, and we can understand that, because it's so confusing, isn't it? It's like, we love our parents, and yet there is going to be pain there. So it's very mixed. It's really confusing. And just getting clarity on that, and being able to actually, you know, separate the two and just say, this is not about because of what happened, you know, that I need to blame or hold on to anything, but it's just, I can understand. And I always think it's really helpful to understand your own parents' upbringing, because you start to see, makes so much sense. It makes so much sense. You go, ah, oh, okay. So my mother, yeah, for example, let's say, not mine, but let's just imagine, didn't have a great relationship with her mother. So she finds it hard to bond to her daughter, for example. So it just opens a door to seeing your parent as a person. And that's something that takes, again, it's the maturity that really, unless it happens, and some people it never happens. You know, I've had clients in their 70s who are still angry with their parents. You know, and that's it's great in the sense that they're there. I don't care how old a person is when they come, you know, they're 70 and they're prepared to do the work, is fantastic. But it's a pity as well to have gone through your whole life being angry with someone. You know, yeah, it's not gonna,
I know. Such, yeah, a shame. Yeah.
It is, but at the same time, it's hopeful that they're there then. You know, isn't it wonderful to see someone come through the door at that age? At any age, really, but
that, I think that's a beautiful message in itself, you know, for anything, you know, yeah, like for therapy, because you often, you know, how often would someone say, oh, well, I'm too old to do that now, or I'm too old to change. Yes. I'm too stuck in my ways.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's not true, you know.
Absolutely.
And everything you're saying, and that a lot of what comes is through letting go. And it's not so much of taking more on, it's actually letting go of stuff like the anger with your parents, whatever. It's the acceptance of, just say if it was the parents, you know, of something that happened to you, and just saying, you know, they did the best that they could at the time with the tools that they had. And I think that's a really important message for ourselves as well, you know, because as you grow, instead of, like, you know, looking back on things and being feeling shame maybe about a way that you behaved in the past, or as you said, like, you know, creating drama or whatever it might be, to be able to lay that down is like, it's huge, right?
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. It's a good point, Tina. Yeah, is that, that's really self-compassion and self-forgiveness. You know, we harbor a lot of resentment towards ourselves often, and that's kind of quite often transferred out, you know, it's misdirected, if you like, into it could be a colleague at work, it could be a friend, it could be a frustration with someone else, and we don't realize that it's actually within our own selves that we're kind of annoyed with a part of ourselves, and, you know, that can be reflected in someone else, and then we redirect it out and justify it, and, you know, all of that just is exhausting, you know, and when you're free from it, you realize, wow, I don't have to live my life like that. And, you know, I was listening to something recently, and in fact it happened to me years ago as well. I was in New York, and I was on it was this, you know, the Pendulum Summit that comes to Ireland every year. It was on in New York one year, and I just happened to be there. And we went to the conference, and I actually, it was a great story, because Jack Canfield, if you know his work, he's Chicken Soup for the Soul is his most famous. Yeah. So he's like this American, you know, great motivational speaker. And he was doing a talk, and he asked for somebody. And of course, me being me, I love to get up and, you know, I love, I suppose I, yeah, I like being on stage and performing and all of that. So he needed someone, and my hand went up, and he called me up to stage, and he said, he was doing this exercise, and I kind of understood what he was doing just because I worked in the same, I could see where he was going with it. So I was working with him, and you always want to help the person that you're with on stage. You want to make it a success for them, if you like. But then he asked me, and I found myself flummoxed because he said to me, think of a person that you really don't like, that you actually hate. And I said, I'm really sorry. I said, I can't do that. And he was like, oh my God. He said, like, you are a great person. He was like, even just like a little bit. And I was like, I was really struggling. I was like, I'm so sorry. I said, I actually just can't. I don't really feel that there's someone there that I don't like, or a difficult person in my life. Like, I found that the more I became less difficult with myself, the less difficult people I have. Like, I don't, it's not perfect. There's going to be relationships that are go up and they go down, but I don't feel like I have difficult people in my life. That can be such a drain on people. So anyway, it was quite funny. And the long and short of it is, I ended up asking him for an endorsement for my first book, The Positive Habit. So I
Amazing.
swooped in there. I saw the opportunity. That's, again, that's an example of really putting yourself forward without fear. Do you know? Like, that's it requires confidence, and it requires belief and faith in the work that you do. And that book has just gone on to help thousands and thousands of people all over the world. So it's like, it's really it's worth it in so many levels, because it goes beyond you. That's
Yeah.
what I love about it.
I love that story because you know as well that when we can start to let things go as well, and then generally your energy or your own vibration starts to raise, you know, and you start to all of a sudden you say, oh, I just met this other person that's really interested in the same thing I'm into, or oh, I just, you know, this thing just happened to me out of the blue, you know, these synchronicities and
Yes,
that
exactly.
and
That's it.
so you know you happened because you say, oh, I was in New York and this happened to be on, you'd say, well, or, you know, I would say, I wonder, did that just happen or was that supposed to just be the way? And because you operate from a high level of energy, you know, that came into your consciousness. Maybe had you been, you know, sometimes when
Oh, I
you're in a
did chase
different
him down
state
the
of mind,
stairs. I
you
chased
know.
him down the stairs. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
that too, and I heard this, I can't remember who said it or who I was listening to, but it was like, if you can get 20 seconds of radical courage to take the first step at anything, because often it's like the biggest hurdle is showing up, is
Yeah.
actually deciding I'm going to
Heard that
do
as well.
whatever
I
it
think
is.
it's like you count to five, and if it's like, if you don't do it in those first 5 seconds, you're going to lose it. So it's almost like that example. You're about to go up and say, ask somebody something, or you want to introduce yourself to someone, or you want to ask somebody on a date, or whatever it might be, and you count to five, one, two, and you have to go within five, and then you just use that momentum. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
it's all fear, you know, all this stuff. So I wanted to ask you about it's why do we seem to prefer to stick with the misery instead of taking the courage to kind of step into what could be great? Because I know that on the other side of fear is limitless possibilities, right? And it took me, you know, a very long time to understand that, but what is it that's in us that prefers the misery? Is it these hormones we're secreting? Is it something to do with our brain? Like what is it that makes it easier for people to stick with what they know, even if they what they're comfortable with, I guess, even though you know that there's better there out for you, there has to be, but we find it, we're so
Yeah.
resistant.
Well, it's like I said earlier, it's the tricky brain, it's evolution. I don't think we've fully evolved as human beings yet. So, because of that, we're going on a survival level. It doesn't make sense to put ourselves in a threatening position. To put ourselves forward, to ask that person on the date, to, it's much safer and easier, you know, quotation marks, to stay safe. That's our first port of call. It's just unfortunate because quite often what we think is helping us stay safe on a primitive level, as you say, consciously we know that it isn't, is that's where that gap starts to become closed, and you're operating from a higher level of consciousness. You're operating from presence, from awareness, from, you know, the unconditioned self. But it is, like I said, it's a training, and one that requires effort, time, and commitment. So yeah, I think the best way to sum it up is that it isn't your fault, whatever, you know, if you're suffering from anxiety, depression, anger, management, people pleasing, imposter syndrome, any of these really hard, debilitating conditions, it is not your fault. You know, that's very important to get. But it's not where the story ends, because if you just stay with it's not my fault, well, then it's quite disempowering, isn't it? And that's how the negativity bias in the brain works. It's like, you know, it's negativity is like Velcro and positivity is like Teflon. So it requires that conscious effort. So it's not your fault, number one. Number two, you are accountable. And that's where
that's the hardest thing, you know. It is so empowering when you embrace it. And I think for me, I remember when I started out kind of saying, right, I can't carry on like this. I need to figure things out. And being told that, you know, like that I had to take responsibility from where I was. And I remember Fiona being so angry. I was so angry with the therapist for a while. You know what I mean? I was like, how dare she say that to me? I did this. She's saying, you know what I mean? I was like, I couldn't believe that someone would tell me that I was where I was because of my own doing. I was so insulted. But as a few, and it didn't take me that long to get there, but like as the weeks went on, I went, oh, okay, I understand. And it's right, you know, and that's, I think it is the hardest thing for people is just kind of taking responsibility for where they are in their lives. You know, look, I think
with
it's
compassion with the idea that it isn't your fault. That's, you know, that takes away the kind of, I think, that understandable anger that can arise. I think that it is alleviated when we say, well, look, this is part of being human, that we all feel this. There's a common humanity there. But you're right. I think a lot of people can feel, you know, but she sounds like she was a good therapist in many ways. It's just, I think it's the timing of that message going to a client, you know. It's like,
yeah,
they need to be ready, you know. So it's definitely not the first session type of
conversation. Yeah, I know. I don't think everybody would come back.
Yeah,
you started there.
Depends again on how much work a person's done. Sometimes it is, you know, it's like I'll have people come to me who've done years of therapy, and my first thing is, well, what have you learned? Because let's go from there. We don't need to start from scratch here. Like, just tell me, you know, and then we can go from there. But if you've got someone who's coming in with very little kind of, you know, therapy, if any at all, and very little self-awareness, it's a different approach.
Absolutely. So I'd love to touch it. So you have two books that are two best-selling books that I have read. I've read The Positive Habit. I've read that twice. And because I don't think I was ready for it when I read it the first time.
Interesting. Like just like we were just saying there, it might have been. Yeah. Okay.
And I find that with a lot of books that maybe, like, you know, you hear something and you're in that space, you're like, oh, I need to do something. And then you get this book because somebody recommended it or something like that. And then, you know, you read it, you start to read it and you find it difficult to get through, or it doesn't speak to you. I have loads of books that I'm only reading now that have been sitting there, you know, for 4 or 5 years, because there was always that part of me, the spiritual part or whatever, that was I was kind of living from a space of maybe shame and guilt a lot of the time in my life. And so it was like, oh yeah, but will I, you know, what would people think of me if I started, you know, all these things that we tell ourselves. But with The Positive Habit, I remember I think it was well before COVID, it was 2019. See when it came.
Yeah.
And I read it, and then I listened to it again last year, the audiobook, and I was like, is this the same book? Honestly, because obviously it was, but because I was in a different place. And I think that's like, there are some things, and like the positive habit or the self-love habit, it's like that should be read over and over again, depending on where you are. And I just, you know, and I have lots of books that I read, I pick up all the time as well.
Yes.
And that it speaks to you differently each time, depending on where you are. And just, I guess, and you've got a new book. It's very exciting. You've got a new book coming out on sleep. Which,
yes.
So do you want to just tell us a little bit about that?
It'll be out. It's been due for publication in April 24. And basically, yeah, it is. It's been like a real journey, to be honest. And sleep is fundamental to our health, our whole health, our physical health, our mental health, our everything, right? It's kind of the cornerstone. So for example, if again, I'm working with someone and they're not sleeping well, it's like, I can't really help them because it's like you take two steps forward and 10 steps back, right? Because whatever work has been done is not actually being marinated into the brain, because we need it. It's so essential. So the book, though, the approach that I took, and I went on my own journey, to be honest, with it, and it's not over yet, and like anything, but you know, it's a case of really a book that on sleep, that what's unique about it is that as I started to write it, I realized that there's so much anxiety around sleep. And a lot of the books go in on that level, right? So they have a lot of research to show you what happens if you don't sleep and all the negative kind of effects from that. So I quickly discovered that I had to do something different. I had to make a book that was actually really so much about the mindset. It's like anything. It's like we limit ourselves in terms of the relationship that we have with sleep. We say we're either, oh, you know, I'm just not a good sleeper. Again, it's definitive. I've never really been that good. You know, and the approach that I've taken is that you're waking up spiritually, emotionally, mentally, so that you sleep well. Right. So it's kind of reversing it around. It's like a 360 degree of how you live well, how your habits. There's 8 habits in the book, and they're all based on lifestyle medicine. And so it's very scientifically, you know, rooted. But at the same time, it's that sense of when you're at peace with yourself, you're going to go to sleep well. So we work from that level. So a good night's sleep starts the moment you open your eyes, as opposed to when you close them going into bed at night. So it's been a real journey. Like, and it's like my sleep has, I always thought I was a good sleeper. And I suppose I was, compared to many people, not that comparisons are good, but you know, I would have been probably very good compared to a lot of people who struggle with it. But now it's like the effectiveness of my sleep has increased probably 100%. It's so much more, the quality of it is because I understand the science behind it and I've applied it to myself. It's like so powerful. The energy, you know, I used to get very tired in the afternoons. I get tired quite early in the evening. Now my energy just, it's really solid throughout the day. So now it's not that I don't get tired. I do, but it's much, much stronger than it was. So it's been brilliant, to be honest. I'm really looking forward to this and helping a lot of people to sleep well and live more.
Yeah, no, and it's true, because it's one of those things that we all know. It's like drinking water. You know, when you say, what can I do to improve my skin? Sometimes the things are so simple. It's like, and then it's like, why are we so resistant against those simple things? But a good night's sleep, I mean, even the Proverbs will tell you, you know, everything looks better in the morning when you have a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
You know, history and ancestrally, you know what I mean, like that has always been there. So I think that's amazing, and the fact that you're looking at it from a different perspective, as opposed to, because a lot of it is very negative and kind of saying, you know, it's the doom kind of thing.
Oh, you don't get sick. Yeah, exactly.
Those things.
Yeah, And also it works on a subconscious level. So there's 8 hypnotherapy audios that go with the book. So you listen to them each week, and that's the kind of effortless ease part where your subconscious has been planted in with the habits that you need to do, that you're basically being guided to sleep. So it's like a companion. And that's, you know, the reason I wrote the book is that all the feedback, you know, even before The Positive Habit was published, was your audios put me to sleep. You know, I can't believe I'm sleeping so much better. So it felt like it was a natural step for me to go into this.
Oh no, I really, really look forward to reading it. I suppose, oh look, we could probably be here all day because there's a million things that I wanted to ask that I haven't asked you. So I'm just going to say I'll have to have you back on again to chat again about other things. But I suppose just round up, what would you say, what is your opinion on, I guess, in life and like why we're here? Because I think we spoke a lot about external searching and going inwards. I'd love to know your idea on like how we can live more fulfilling and passionate lives. So part of me doing this podcast is to help people to see that they can curate a life that they actually want to be living, as opposed to the way that we're told that we should be living. And, you know, we touched on it earlier about talking about the grind of maybe even parenting and trying to be everything for everyone. And that's so I'd love to know your take on how we could be living and building these lives that we actually want to live.
Well, I would say we are here, that we all have a purpose, and it's our job to find out what that purpose is. But I do believe that we all have one. And I think that when, you know, I think it was Marianne Williamson said, you know, if there's a voice telling you that you're not really living the life that you should be living, then it's probably right. You know, that you need to listen to that voice. And the way that I implement this myself personally is every morning I start off with the same question. And the question is, how can I serve the world today? Question mark. And then I will write down specifically, like even today, I'll say, okay, what's coming ahead? I've got this podcast, so I want to help Tina's listeners to the best of my ability, right? So it's specific, it's not vague. It's not like I want to help the world be better. It's like, well, how am I going to do that? What are the steps? Maybe later on I'm doing my training, I want to make sure that I turn up prepared, you know, professional, well-rested, etc. So it's specific. And when you start every day with that question, you're going to be living in alignment. You're going to be discovering what your purpose is. And it doesn't have to be so grandiose. It doesn't, you know, it's very clear to see in a kind of profession like mine, where I am actually, you know, working directly to help the people. It doesn't have to be that. It can be you're an accountant and you need to, you know, you're helping people too. And it's just, you know, in such an important way. So I want to make sure that I get the best X, Y, or Z for this person today. And I think that being specific is important. I think that, you know, we need to be clear. Clarity is essential, because when you, and I write it down. And so when I write it down, there's an accountability there. I'll go back this evening and I'll look and I'll say, well, did I do that? And I'll be honest, maybe I could have, you know, and that's not being hard on myself. It's just like, yeah, well, maybe I could have been a little bit more patient there with my son today, for example. I did get a bit frustrated. So noted, not hard, not harsh on myself, but just being aware. I did get a bit stressed when I lost my bank card or whatever it might be. So yeah, that would be my response to that. So hopefully it's a helpful.
It is. I think that would be really helpful for people. And what you're saying there, which is like, you're saying, put intention on what you're doing. And that will bring you closer to your purpose every day. It's like, you know,
name of your brilliant podcast, True Intentions.
True Intention. And that's why, and it was something that I heard, I think it was in one of Oprah's, I think it's in What I Know For Sure. Yeah. Another one that I have listened to and, you know, read over and over again. But she says she does nothing now without intention. So no matter what it is, and I actually think when we start putting intention on everything that we do, life just aligns itself. Things just come to us. And I was laughing when you say every morning, I say, you know, because that's what I do now as well. I kind of say, right, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? Just send me in that direction today. And like when I was meditating this morning, and I was, and I do the same thing. It's like, okay, well, I'm doing this podcast with Fiona this morning. Guide me, you know, I just need to be still for a moment and be guided to ask the questions that allow to hold the space for her to be able to answer, that then gives the answers to the audience, that they, the things that they need to hear. And that's instead of being what I might have done in a former life, you know, been a very studious student and okay, and I'll go from here to here and here to here. It's like, it's the putting down. And, you know, when you set your intention, the rest will just flow, and the trust, right? It's, you know, it's trusting.
I think so. But I would say as well that there is a sense of, you know, I just mean this generally speaking now. It's like, yes, it's like you prepare and then you let it go.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'll do in all my talks, whatever. I'll be very prepared and it's there. But it's not definitive. It's not rigid. But there is space for, and I think that's important as well for our mental health, is that there is that sense of effort and intention. And that's why I'm saying being specific is really good, because mm-hmm. it's kind of holding yourself accountable. It's, that's the responsibility part. So yeah, it's again, it's a mix of all of these wonderful things. And that's the trust element. I think you're right. It's really important. Like that's essential, because you're holding, you're kind of allowing that presence to speak through you, I think is what you're saying there, which is gorgeous and very authentic and very important.
Yeah. And I think that's what is so important, is to let people know that like being yourself is perfect. Like that's the only perfection that there is, you know what I mean? Like just be, and when we talk about authenticity, that's what we're saying. It's like just feeling okay to be who you are. And it's feeling okay that if I feel a bit frustrated today, that's all right, and I didn't do so well on something that I had set out to do, that's okay. And
yeah,
I think
human,
like just
yeah.
we need to know that like we are enough just as we are in this moment right now.
Absolutely, Tina. Yeah.
So before I let you go, tell everybody, where can we find you? Where can we find your books? And we didn't even get to talk about, you do so many gorgeous online courses and retreats and everything else, because obviously doing this work on your own is really wonderful. But like when you come together with a group of people that are all working towards the same goal, that's something magical. So direct people to be able to find you and all that information about all the gorgeous work that you do.
Sure. Yeah. The best place would be like for, you know, meditations I do, lives I do, etc., would be my Instagram, which is @thepositivehabit. And then the website is thepositivehabit.com as well. So those would be the best places to find me.
Well, thank you so much for your time and your gorgeous presence this morning. Okay. I'm delighted to have spent the time with you, and I'm sure there'll be so many people that will get whatever that they need to get from our conversation. So thank you so much, Fiona.
Thank you, Tina. That's
great.
Well, that was a gorgeous conversation. There is so much wisdom to be gained from Fiona's words. Here are some of the main insights from today's episode with Fiona. Embrace courage to step into the unknown and unlock the potential greatness that lies beyond fear. Radical courage can open doors to unexpected opportunities. Releasing resentment towards yourself leads to a positive shift in energy and in your relationships. It is so important to connect with your authentic self, the unconditioned self, and to remember that self-love and self-compassion needs continuous practice and devotion. You can connect with Fiona through her website, thepositivehabit.com, and on Instagram @the_positive_habit. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with someone, message them, email them, or text them the link. Please share it on your social media and tag us @TrueIntentionPodcast and Fiona @the_positive_habit. I'm sure she would love to see it. Follow, subscribe, and review the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on whatever platform you use to listen, because it really does help us so much. Thank you so much for listening. It means the absolute world to me. I will talk to you very soon.